Welcome to what is going to be approaching the 40th Oak Hall Cafe. We've had a number of these events, but I've got to say that this is the first time that people drifting through the car park were saying to each other, have we got Jack Johnson today? Is he playing? Or was that John Mayer I heard as I walked in? Well, we've got kind of better than Jack Johnson or John Mayer. We've got all wrapped into one, the kind of folk jazz guitarist, Nate Orr. He's going to be playing for us a number of his own songs during this morning. And then later on, after our cafe, he's going to keep singing. We normally kind of plug in the MP3 player and listen to something. But today we're going to have live music continuing as we enjoy our teas and coffees as Nate sings us more of this really wide repertoire of songs that he's singing all over the place, actually. But Nate, do you live locally or have you come a bit further than just round the corner?
Me and my wife have come from, we're originally from Wales, we drove from Cardiff yesterday from my in-laws' family, my in-laws, and but actually we're living in North England at the moment, sorry about that.
No, beautiful. And what's the town that you're living in?
We live in a big place called Buckshaw Village. It's becoming one of the biggest housing estates in Europe, and me and my wife work for the church there, and we're the only church on the village. A huge place, very very surreal. Yeah.
It's a sweet place too.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Not as nice as Cajun, but it's all right. It's very nice. So, Abs, it's lovely to have you here too. And Nate, I understand that although there was only two seats filled in the car, there were perhaps more in the vehicle.
We're currently pregnant. I mean, I'm not, but I think it had something to do with it, so that's always good. So it's really exciting. 23, going on 24 weeks. Just really, really pumped. I mean, I said to someone yesterday, I think I'm probably one part terrified to 19 parts excited. So that's a pretty good ratio. I mean, so that's good.
Brilliant, Nate. Well, Nate plays in all across Europe and across the UK too, but he's focused there on that area in North England, in Leyland. And Nate, I know that you, as well as playing covers of John Mayer or Jack Johnson or various other people, you write your own stuff too. And we're really looking forward to hear some of your own songs this morning. Tell us about the kind of atmosphere of this first song.
The atmosphere I wrote this song for was something like this. So as I play it, please feel free to just enjoy each other, enjoy your coffee and your tea and your cakes. It's called Coffee, the song, and I wrote it kind of thinking about, there's times when you've sat in a coffee shop, maybe with a friend or by yourself, and you've just kind of been in a quiet moment and you've watched life pass you by around you. I thought there was a uniqueness about those times. It's quite bittersweet, isn't it? Kind of like the coffee you're drinking. And it's really sweet. You get to see people living their lives and having fun and laughter. But it also goes by so quickly. I'm 22 going on 23 and I'm about to have a baby and life just, it goes. And there's a bittersweet nature to that. I kind of enjoyed the fortunate parallel between bittersweet coffee and bittersweet seasons as they go. So,
brilliant.
Yeah, so just relax and
enjoy. I want to give you a big welcome, Nate. Yeah.
Its way through the air, guys converse with girls on their way to the chairs. It's a movie scene right in front of me. Beige boots cross the floor, the journey is done. Cream cups clatter before all the laughter's begun. It's a magic place of constant change, where I get lost in thought. I'm overwrought with the way things are changing. Warm my hands on the cup, creamy bubbles on top, and the pictures they're painting of bitter and sweet, where fast and slow meet as I sit and watch life pass me by. Pass me by. Young turns into old as life presses on. Seasons come and go, drifting along like these wooden chairs that will soon be bare. The table grain is revealed, my mug whisked away, warm nostalgia fills the rest of the day. The room quickly grows with sepia tones, where I get lost in thought. I'm overwrought with the way things are changing. Warm my hands on the cup, creamy bubbles on top, and the pictures they're painting of bitter and sweet, where fast and slow meet as I sit and watch life pass me by. Pass me by.
Well, that's beautiful, Nate. Absolutely beautiful. We've got more from Nate as the morning unfolds. And then later on, as we enjoy more coffee, we'll be hearing more of his songs and others over that too. But Nate, we're going to be hearing more from him as the morning goes, and we have a little more of his story. But also, I want to introduce our second guest this morning. And his name is Rod. He's come all the way from the valley to come up here to Burntwood Lane. So a big welcome to Rod. Now, if you've not been to an Oak Hall Cafe before, you'll know that the conversation and meeting people is really the heart of it and really central to these mornings together. And Rod, we're so glad that you're a part of this conversation today. So have you always been from around Caterham? If you came up the hill for this moring, have you always been from around here?
Yeah, I was born in Redhill in Surrey.
There you go.
And 1942, long way to go. And I sort of lived with my grandparents, and then the bombing got really bad, so they sent me up to Sleaford in Lincolnshire, where my other gran lived.
So, half a minute. So, you told me about your mum.
Right
at the beginning, even before you'd arrived.
That's right,
the war was on, wasn't it? The Second World War.
That was in 1940.
So,
and the aircraft, the German aircraft followed our English fighters back.
Yeah.
And then bombed Kenley, Biggin Hill, Croydon and everything.
Where was she working
my
at that
time? My mum was working in Bourgeois' scent factory there, and they completely destroyed that.
No.
And a chap threw himself on top of my mum. He died, but she survived.
Really?
But she never, ever forgot that.
Yeah.
And then when I was born and my brother was born and things started getting a bit, hostile, we were sent up to Sleaford.
So at that time, a lot of kids and young families were moving out of town, weren't
they? Yeah, a lot of youngsters were being evacuated to all over the place, down in Devon. I had to go up to Sleaford, Lincolnshire, which was flat and cold and wet. But
I'm sure it's beautiful. So what was it? Was it that place your mum chose to go, your mum and dad, or...?
No, my father said that that's where I should go to his mum's.
So his mum was there?
Yeah, she ran a pub called the Grapes Inn opposite Sleaford Station.
Oh, right.
And
So did you live near the pub? You lived in the pub?
Lived in the pub, yeah. She ran the pub, yeah.
So now you're living with your gran in Sleaford.
Yeah.
And your mum and dad are there. And your mum and dad...
Well, my dad wasn't there at the time. He was in the army. So,
right.
Yeah.
What was he doing in the army?
Well, originally he was with the Royal Warwickshires, and then he got... promoted, if you like, as a military policeman.
Yeah. So you're growing up as a kid, really single parent at that point, because your dad's away with the military police.
Yeah.
Working, mum working in the pub or just looking after you?
Just looking after us.
That's sure. That was a big job. And then waiting for dad to come back, I guess.
Yeah.
What year did he come back?
He came back around about 45.
Yeah.
And he came back and he was the most violent person you could ever wish to meet.
Do you think there was any reason for that, or just his nature? Or?
I don't know. I have heard since that a lot of military policemen during the war were quite violent towards what they call squaddies and things like that at the time. So when he came home, he got... He thought he'd just carry on the same as he did when he was in the army, get violent. And,
right. So
he was pretty scary. He used to beat my mum up, beat my brother and myself up. He threw me down some stone steps in the pub, which I had a great lump over my left eye, which damaged my retina in my left eye. So that was...
How old were you then, Rod, when that happened?
About 7, 8, I suppose.
Yeah.
And... my uncle decided to visit my mum up there.
Where was your uncle coming from?
He was just came up to visit
from here. From
Brumwell Road, Silas City.
Yeah.
And he came up and he just saw the state of us, and he phoned my gran and said, "Look, I'm bringing him back today." Much to my father's attempt to kill him a couple of times.
Really.
Tried to beat him up a couple of times, pinned him up against the wall, and just some awful things, but we managed to get us away, get us on the train, got us back down here.
Yeah.
And then my gran...
So your life began down here, the war came, continued, so you went to safety. The war ended when safety should have come, and your dad came home, and suddenly the home is absolute nightmare and disaster. And that could have been the end. The story continue up there. But your uncle, so the brother of your mum, arrives, sees the state of you all, and basically takes you from one gran to the other gran who lives in Saunderstead.
Yeah.
And rescues you, really, out of that situation. Wow. But you, at the risk of his life, you're brought down to Saunderstead. So what's life like now? So you're one gran up there is running a pub. What's your other gran doing down here?
Oh, she was just looking after my grandfather. My grandfather, worked. So, and that was it, really. So it was quite stable. It was we felt safe.
Yeah.
And my mum was still up there with my father, and then they came down and.
Right.
They converted half the house so that we could have half the house.
Right.
And so that my gran could keep an eye on them. But that wasn't really a good idea because my father still wanted to cause a lot of trouble,
Right.
And he was always you know, he'd come home at night, and if his dinner wasn't on the table, then my, you know, he used to kick me and my brother around the room. Some of, if my mum didn't have it actually there on the table when he walked through the door.
Right.
Yeah.
I know that you're really involved with music now, and that that's been a kind of thread running through your life. Mm. You're managing a band, and
oh, but, I've done that, started that now. Yeah, that's a mistake, but never mind.
But back then, was music in your life in any way?
Well, my gran, yeah. My gran was a pianist, and she played for the London Philharmonic Orchestra.
Yeah.
And she decided that I should learn to play the guitar.
Yeah.
Because my granddad played it, my uncle and my aunt, they all played guitars and stuff.
Brilliant.
And we used to have this jazz session some Sundays in the summer, and everybody used to come and sit outside in the road and listen to us, you know.
Great.
Listen to him play. And so it was pretty good.
Wow.
And we had Sir Malcolm Sargent, who was used to conduct the orchestra, he used to come round occasionally on a Sunday. That was a big...
Amazing.
A big thing, but yeah.
So you had the conductor of the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra for lunch there in Sarnford.
Well, not literally for lunch, but...
and you were flamenco, and what kind of guitar were you playing?
Classical, mainly.
Classical, mainly.
Yeah, and I did a little bit of flamenco. But...
And you were working up through the grades, weren't you? Pretty serious.
Yeah. I mean, by the time I was 18, I think I was about 6th or 7th grade, so it was pretty good. And then... Skiffle came along, and I thought, oh, this is good. So I said to my mate Keith, who was the drummer of the group after, I said, oh, this is good. I said, we'll have some of this. So we started playing. My gran's going, three chords. I've paid all that money, and you're playing three chords.
Excellent.
So I thought, oh, you know. So she went on a bit, and then we, you know, it was the old cymbals on the washboards, and I had tea chest with a broom handle and a piece of string, boom, 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 you know. And I thought I was the bee's knees then, you know. And that was it, really. We just started to keep going. And then my friend had got a Fenton Wheels bass guitar, which, you know, I don't think they make them now. I don't know if they do or not. But and he said, you know, he couldn't play it, so he said, do you want to have a go? So I said, well, yeah, I'll give it a go. So I started playing that, and all the other lads said, yeah, this is good, you know, we ought to start a rock group. So I said, well, yeah, this is, you know, so we did, and that's how we sort of went on from there, you know.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So you went from 6 strings to 1 and then went up to 4. Yeah. From your bass.
Yeah, sort of yeah.
Brilliant. I've got a little clip here of a band playing. It's not your band, but... Anyone name that band? What do you think? Yeah, Rolling Stones. Anyone seen the Rolling Stones play? All right, there's a few rockers out there. You seen them ever, Rod?
Sorry?
Have you seen Rolling Stones play?
Oh, yeah.
Where did you see them first play?
Well, this is difficult, really. we had a big semi-professional competition in the early parts of the 60s.
So like the X Factor for the 60s?
Well, not really, because it was down at Carl Shorten Park, and I can't...
Okay.
And there was about 30 groups entered.
Yeah.
And the Rolling Stones were there, but it only just started, so they weren't exactly like they are now.
How did they do in the competition?
Well, they came fourth.
Really? Well, that's pretty good, isn't it? Fourth. Yeah. Who won the competition?
We did.
Yeah, all right. Well, there you go. So with that, where could you go after that? That's amazing, Rod. Well, so what did you do with your band then after that?
Well, we just had quite a few contracts popping up, you know. Yeah. We had a good manager, so he just sort of got us around. We went and done quite a few different gigs with different places. Yeah. So it was really good. We enjoyed ourselves. It was good. Money was coming in. There was, you know, plenty of women, booze and...
Did you think so that this was what life was?
Yeah, I thought this was great. Living the dream. Come on, you know. I mean, you can't do any worse than that, can you? Women falling over you to get to you. And,
yeah.
You know, and I mean, the biggest problem was, I think, was because we were so high on adrenaline when we came off stage, we just had to find a way around it. A lot of the groups, i.e. Rolling Stones and people later on, started taking drugs and stuff. Yeah. I just used to come off and drink about a bottle and a half of brandy.
Right.
Yeah. Which hasn't done my left kidney a lot of good.
No, but I'm sure.
Kind of pickled it a bit.
Yeah.
But, so that was the situation. Yeah, it was pretty good.
I know that you played with a few other people. Another person for you to try and guess who this is. So it shouldn't take too long to guess who this is. Here it comes. Here we go. Here he is. Anyone know who that is? Yeah. All right. Here we go. Let's have a little listen. Okay, he's going to have
introduce his band. Do a number that's more than it's called Do You Want to Dance?
Why do you want to dance and hold my hand? Squeeze me, baby, I'm your man. Oh, baby. Do you wanna dance? Well, do you wanna dance under the moonlight? Squeeze and hug me all through the night, oh baby. Do you wanna dance? I'll tell you. Do you wanna dance? Do you wanna dance?
There you go. Well, I know that some of us in this room have spent time with that person. You got to meet Cliff too, didn't you?
Yeah, when we were playing at a particular gig.
And he said something pretty profound to you, but at the time, you kind of, it's like water off a duck's back, yeah?
Yeah, he was a very laid-back young man, and he at that time, and he had a really good group backing him, and I was in with Jet Harris, who played bass, and we were sort of a bit of a load of lads together. But he came up to me one day and he said, have you ever thought of, you know, becoming a Christian? And I thought, yeah, right, mate, on your bike, I'm all right, you know.
Yeah.
I don't want to go down that road. Yeah. I've been there when I was 16 and I've left that.
Yeah.
And that was the end of the conversation, really. Huh. I don't think anything...
So this bloke, who's really well known at the time, as he is now, came up to you, and in the conversation, you could see your life with all that it was made up of, and felt that there was something more to be had, and said to you, hey, Rod, do you want to become a Christian? And at that moment, although you remembered the question, it was kind of...
It was just something that I just thought, yeah, right, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, I'm happy, I've got, you know... Earning good money, drinking.
Yeah, yeah.
Having the time of my life, really.
Right.
So what do I want to do that for, you know?
Thanks.
Because I've been there before, so...
Because as a kid, you'd grown up in a kind of traditional
I was, you know, when I was with my grandparents, I mean, we went to church every Sunday and a Sunday school and a very strict, you know, and it was no elbows on the table, speak when you're spoken to, you know, things like that. But it was good because it gave us respect for our elders. But the religious side of it got too much for me in the end, and I got to 16, and when you get 16, 17, which is a bad thing, to reject something that is I've now found is important.
Yeah, we'll come to
but,
that.
But, yeah, you know, it did...
Yeah.
That's I was off, you know. Thought, yeah. This is good.
Right.
Well, we're going to go to church anymore.
We're going to picture Rod right there now. So there he is, playing with guys like this, and thinking he's found the answer to everything. And people, though, interrupting that moment, saying to him things like what Cliff said to him, hey, have you ever thought about, is there something more? Have you ever thought about becoming a Christian? And Rod just kind of rejecting that. But perhaps that question echoing in his mind. Well, Nat... You know, I'm looking forward to another song from you. I think all of us are in different parts of our own story, aren't we? We kind of some of us in the moment where it's the time of our lives, perhaps like that moment that Rod's describing there. Perhaps some of us are feeling like we're tumbling down the stairs, like a bit earlier in the middle of that story of Rod's just there. And sometimes, whether on the high or on the low, we can feel like we're really isolated and on our own, and there's no one else involved. Maybe isolated on our own is what it's all about. Or maybe that actually means he was feeling really empty. But what's this song about, Nat?
Yes, next song is kind of looking at the religious aspect, and actually I found it quite dissatisfying. And so I just kind of questioned that, put that in a song, and it's a bit of a conversation between me and God. And I remember when I was writing this, kind of just being really fed up with going through the motions. Kind of, I had a similar story in the sense of grew up going to church and doing the church thing, and I think that's all it was for a very long time, just doing the church thing. And but in terms of affecting my heart for real, I don't think it'd quite done that yet for a long time. And I was just reflecting on that. And so this song is called "You See Me." Yeah, and just how God kind of wants to respond to that place.
You see me. Thanks.
I see you, you see me, going through the motions so naturally. I've got it down to a T, looking like I'm moving but going nowhere quickly. But I don't have to try so hard, so quit my floundering, lay the pious facade to rest. I lay it all to rest. And so this time I'll leave behind the idea that I could be enough for you. I've had enough of proving what I can. So I'll cry up to the sky, still in fear of losing all control, as I surrender one more time. I'm losing my eyesight while you see me. Yeah, you see me more clearly. It doesn't come naturally to gain it all by setting it all free. And I still don't understand how I move on when I lay down my plans. But I don't have to try so hard, quit my floundering, lay the pious facade to rest. I lay it all to rest. And so this time I'll leave behind the idea that I could be enough for you. I've had enough of proving what I can't. So I'll cry up to the sky, still in fear of losing all control, as I surrender one more time. I'm losing my eyesight while you see me. Do you see love, or a gaping hole in my heart where it was? Do you see I'm blinded by distractions? Yet all the while you've been holding on, you've never once left my side. And so this time I'll leave behind The idea that I could be enough for you, no more proving what I can. So I'll cry up to the sky. No more fear of losing all control as I surrender one last time. I give you my eyesight while you see me. Yeah, you see me more clearly.
Wow, it's just beautiful stuff, isn't it? Absolutely brilliant, Nate. Thanks so much. Well, that song is echoing with this sense of somebody who's been all their lives perhaps trying to sort their life out in front of God and then realizing that actually it's not about that. It's about a God who rescues and intervenes. And well, let's come back to this story with our friend Rod. Rod, it's you've left us now with this picture of this kind of wild, hedonistic kind of lifestyle, music and everything else that goes with it, fame and glory, really, and feeling like, well, this is it, this is everything. And was it everything, do you think? At that time, did it go on just getting better and better?
It was okay for a little while, but then everything comes to an end, like everything does.
Yeah. You know,
broke up. And
everything. So the band broke up?
Well, we just sort of split up and did different things.
Kind of One Direction moment.
Yeah, we went off to do.
Yeah.
One Direction, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
but, yeah, it just sort of happened, you know. Like a lot of groups do. They just, you know, we were all tired. We'd done a lot of hours. And
So what was life about now, then, if the band had stopped?
Well, it was pretty empty. So, I mean, I just went back to what I used to do, which was work in a garage.
Yeah.
And it was okay. And then I found a young lady and decided to get married. And I remember my wedding day because it was 25th of May 1966, and that's when we've only won the World Cup.
Was
that sort of sticks in my mind, you know, 66. But and that was it. And then the children came along, and
And what kind of things? So you were working, but you also had a bit of work.
Well, I was working, but also I had a, because I was so used to having a lot of money, and I'd used quite a lot of it. So, you know, and I had a family, so I thought, well, you know, I'd sort of do a few things on the side, which weren't very good.
Yeah. So what kind of thing were you doing then, Rod?
Well, I'd been doing, once I retired from the group, I started doing weightlifting, so I was quite big. So everybody was saying, oh, you know, can you do this for me? Can you do that for me? And I was, you know, I did work for the loan sharks for a little while, going around threatening people. And
so you were a strong bloke. They weren't just saying, hey, could you lift this for me? You were actually doing something else with your strength.
Well, kind of threatening, yeah, which was bad.
So that was really an echo of that violence that you'd experienced at home?
Yeah, but it wasn't quite as bad as how my father was. You know, my brother had put all his energy into karate and became, you know, trying to get in the England karate team and got a Great Britain karate team, so he was pretty handy.
Yeah.
And but no, I just wanted to earn money, and I just thought, you know, but then the two blokes I were working with kind of took it to another extreme.
Yeah.
And well, they're both still in prison now, I think. But that's it.
Yeah.
You know, I said,
she came out of that.
I came out of that straight away because, one, I didn't want to go to prison.
Yeah.
And two, I didn't agree with the way things were going. You know, it wasn't a good way. I was earning money, but only a percentage of what I would get. You know, because they were getting what they wanted, and then just paying me off, you know, and then ringing me again and say, so, I just ducked out of that pretty quick.
Yeah. Well, I hope one day, Rod, you write a book and we read it. And
well, my daughter keeps telling me I should.
There you go. There you go. Well, this could be.
And I said to her, "Well, you know, I haven't got the time, really." But I'm 75, so
it'd be a good read. You know. It really would. But so let's miss out a few chapters because I'm sure there's lots of interesting ones in there.
Yeah.
And kind of come to just the last few years because so you've experienced kind of all that fame and pleasure and. As in the band, then
and
you've
a divorce,
and then you've had the violence and family, and then divorce, and now you've got to a few years back, and you had one conversation that you might say was kind of life changing. Tell me about that.
This was the most extraordinary conversation I've ever had.
Wow!
And it was with a lady called Reagan, who was Ray Wallach's mum.
Yeah.
And she'd come over from South Africa for the very first time she'd ever been out of South Africa.
Really?
And she couldn't understand why we didn't have iron grailings around the gardens and guard dogs and stuff like that, because in South Africa, that's how she lived.
Right.
And she was sitting up the garden one afternoon, and I went up there, and I was sitting on the wall, and she was talking to me, and she was dying of cancer, and she was saying how God was helping her through this. And... it's just the things she was saying, making me feel quite belittled, really, on all the things that I'd done. And I was looking at her, and she was so amazingly calm, and you know, and how God was and the Lord was talking to her and helping her all the way through. So and this sort of got into my head, you know. And I'm thinking, wow, that is incredible, you know.
So you're sitting in the garden in Caterham somewhere.
And
this woman's flown in from South Africa, who's the mother of your stepdaughter's boyfriend. Is that right? And she's sitting.
Well,
there.
No, it's Ray. You know.
Got her. And she's dying of cancer, and yet there's some hope and vibrancy about her that you don't know yourself personally.
Yeah, it was amazing how she was.
Yeah.
She just took everything in a stride. It was incredible. It made you feel very, very, very belittled, you know, because she was such an amazing lady. And, and she's just sat there and talked for ages, you know.
What was the heart of what she talked about, if you summarize?
Well, the Lord, really.
So who's the Lord? How do you mean? What do you mean?
Well, she just said how he was helping her through her problems and how, you know, he could help me through my problems.
Talking
and,
about Jesus. Wow.
And it just stuck in my head, and that was it, you know. And then I left there on that day, and then Sunday came round, and I'm thinking, wow, what she said has really changed my mind.
Yeah.
So I went to church.
Huh. Wow.
And I was there for about 6 weeks, and the church was okay, but it didn't change my mind, if you understand what I mean. It was sort of hello, goodbye, and, you know, put your Sunday clothes on and look good, and that's it. And there was nothing there to draw me back. Anyway, one Sunday, that's it, I've had enough of this. So I walked out, walking down the road. I was coming down by the coffee shop there to cross over. And this voice said to me, "Don't forsake me now you've found me." And I think, hello, vicar's run down the road and grabbed me, you know. Thinking, where are you going, mate? I'm having you back. And but it wasn't. There was nobody there. And I really did panic. And I thought, wow. So I went straight home. And Jane said to me, "What are you got?" I said, "Sorry, I've just got to talk to somebody." So I phoned Ray and I said, "Look, I've just had an awful experience." He said, "What do you mean awful?" I said, "Well, I've just had an experience that I can't explain." I said, "I've got to talk to you, and I've got to talk to you as soon as possible." And he thought that I was just going to jack his, you know, Jane in and clear off. But that was the essence of the way he said, "Oh, yeah, right, I see." Yeah. And anyway, we met at a coffee shop on the Monday morning. And Claire turned up, and I walked in, and I just said, I just started talking about the Lord and how the effect his mum had had on me and how I felt. And while I was sitting there, I felt somebody sit beside me. And I thought, wow, what's this? And he's been there ever since.
Right.
He's never left my side. And he's helped me through a lot of really dodgy moments in my life, you know. So up since then.
That's amazing.
And then Ray said, right, I'm taking you to Oak Hall.
Really?
So I said, okay. So he said, look, I'll pick up next Sunday and bring you down here. So he brought me in, walked me into the entrance, and the first person I saw was Dave Hughes, who made me feel as though I had never ever been anywhere else but Oak Hall.
Yeah.
It was amazing. And he made me feel so wanted and so welcomed and everything else, you know. And then Ray knew Tom and Marina, so Tom came over and they just took me under their wing, and I've been with them ever since.
Wow.
You know, Bible study and everything else. It's been amazing.
Wow. So there's something really life-changing about this person of Jesus that you've met personally and with whom you've had a relationship ever since that day a few years back.
That's right. It's changed my whole life. I mean, people that I know meet me now, you know, and they can't understand how different I am. My kids, you know, my daughter can't understand it because, I mean, she married a Hell's Angel. And so they don't deal with things lightly. I mean, he's changed a lot now. She's changed him quite a bit. But she can't understand, you know, we were out in the car the other day and somebody cut her up and she's giving them all the verbal going, you know, and I'm sitting there and she's saying, Dad, say something. I said, I'll pray for him. So she said, that's not going to help me, is it? I said, well, no, but it helps me. Because it stops me losing my temper. Because I know the Lord was at the back saying, Rod, bite your tongue. Yeah. You know, step back. Don't get involved. And that's how it's been, you know. He's changed me so much.
Wow. Well, we're going to come back to one more chapter of Rod's story, but Nate, we'd love another of your songs, please. Yeah. What are you going to sing us?
So this one is called Brand New Life. On the event weeks that my wife and I do across Europe, we travel around kind of like Andy does, but for like whole weeks at a time and help talks like this in a creative way. So my wife will do dramas and direct dramas and I'll do songs. And one of the speakers was... It was a month ago. I was like, I'm doing a talk, and I need some help filling up the time. Can you write a song? So I was like, yeah, okay. And he was actually covering a similar topic to these questions that Rod was talking about just now. Like, actually, you know, can our lives be changed? And you know, Jesus made those claims, and that was the kind of claims we were questioning. You know, like, can this Jesus guy actually do what he's said he can do? And so the song was kind of born out of that conversation and that kind of questioning. So I just used this song called Brand New Life to question that.
So often I find I'm seeking for something more. Darkness is on my mind, that's shaking me to the core. Have you ever felt the need to be a better guy, a better girl? Is total change really impossible? I may need new life, but surely it's not just me. And the change that's needed seems an impossibility. I am drowning in the need to be a better guy in a better world. Is total change really impossible? Can I be someone new who I am. Left behind, let darkness give way to light. Can I gain a brand new life? Da, 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 da. As I've reached this point, I hear you answer me. In the midst of my darkness, your hands were pierced for me. I start to see that you're the better guy that we really need. Because of you, change is possible. Old has gone, new has come. Who I was left behind, and darkness gives way to light. Now I gain a brand new life. In you I gain brand new life. Da 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 da, brand new life. Da 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 da.
Brilliant, absolutely brilliant. Yeah. Wow, I just love these songs. They're amazing, aren't they? So that song, beginning with the questions, and then resolving as we listen and realize that there's this Jesus who offers a brand new life. And that's what Rod has been echoing through his story, pursuing meaning of life in all kinds of directions, and then finding that in Jesus, in relationship with Jesus, things come together, things resolve, things become as they're created to be. It's an amazing story that you're both sharing with us. Thank you so much. Well, we just got a few more minutes, Rod. So tell me something that's been helped you in this growth and this relationship with Jesus. You've talked about your friendship with Tom and Marina. You talked about Dave's massive welcome. But anything else particularly?
Yeah, done Walk Through the Bible, which was very interesting. Still finishing a bit of it now.
Brilliant.
But that was very, very, it's very, very... Well, it's incredible, isn't it?
It's an incredible
story.
Yeah.
And also, the one that I really enjoyed was the Christianity Explored, which is very, very good. I mean, it's incredible. Not only do you get a fantastic meal, which I think relaxes most people before they start.
Yeah.
It's run by Phil and his wife. And
yeah.
Phil's over there. Can you put your hand up, Phil? I'd love to do.
It's a bit of an in-joke. Phil always asks people to put their hand up if they've been on it. Bit of a role reversal. Good job, Rod.
I've always wanted to do that. But anyway. It's an incredible course. And, you know, if people are wanting to find the Lord.
Yeah.
Rico Tice is incredible.
Yeah.
On it. And Phil and his wife do such a fantastic job with it as well.
Brilliant.
It's so good.
Well, look, while you're saying that, just to say that on our tables, in the toast rack, it's actually a literature rack that sometimes people use for toast. But there's a postcard like this. It's white with a kind of blue kind of design on it. And it says Christianity Explored. And do grab that and have a look at it. Pass it around the table. And it says that it's the 12th of June that the next course begins. It's 6 Monday evenings. We've got a kind of absolute top-class chef in Tim over here cooking. Top-class hospitality, as you already heard from Phil and Liz. And there's about 14 people who are going to be part of this next course. So if you want to be part of it too, there's still space. and we'd be delighted for you to be involved. So you can take one of these leaflets and just kind of ring in and say, I want to be involved. Or as you leave on the welcome desk, you can just give your name and number to the team there and say, look, I want to come to that. A free dinner, six Mondays in a row, that sounds good. And also to keep talking about the things that Rod's raised would be a great thing to do. So you're really welcome to come on a course like Rod came on, Christianity Explored. Thanks, definitely, Rod. Definitely. And also, I know you started to read a bit. And what are you reading at the moment?
Well, I'm reading Philip Yancey's What's So Amazing About Grace.
Yeah.
I don't even, I should think most of the people here have read it. It's really interesting. And I think that, okay, it's an amazing book. It's not as amazing as the Bible, but then, uh-huh, because you could never say that, but it is a very, very good book. I'm halfway through it, and it's incredible.
Yeah.
There's a saying on the back, or some words on the back, which are very, very relevant, I think. It says, there's nothing we can do makes God love us more.
Yeah.
And there's nothing we can do that makes God love us less.
Amazing, yeah.
And I think that is the book. If you read the book, and I'm halfway through, it gives you that real in-depth feeling about it.
Amazing. So, unpacking the central idea of the Bible, that there's a God who's there, who loves us, and has come in the person of Jesus towards us, and there's nothing we can do to make him love us more, nothing we can do to make him love us less. He loves us completely. What amazing. What amazing thought and amazing book. And you've experienced that personally, Rod.
Yeah.
I think we've been glimpsing that through this morning. Well, Rod, I know that you're going to be around for the rest of the morning, and some of us might want to just come and ask you more questions about these things that you've been sharing. But thank you so much for coming and just sharing your life story with us. And I think we all just want to say a big thank you. Yeah. Brilliant, Rod. So helpful. Absolutely brilliant. Well, we're going to wrap up over these next few moments, and there's going to be the chance to talk to Rod a bit more, and then we're going to hear another song from Nate as well. But just as we begin to close our cafe together, let's just think back over what we've been hearing. We've been hearing about a person who's kind of pursued life in all kinds of ways, trying to get the marrow out of life in all kinds of different directions, whether through music or through relationships, through money, and just kept on coming to the point of, well, is there something more? And then, just a few years ago, in our very town here, he's had this very personal encounter with a God who is there, a God who comes to us in the person of Jesus and invites us into relationship with him, a God who is characterized by the most amazing love, that a whole book could be written about it, and it's still not really bring it all together. A God who loves so much that he comes in the person of Jesus, the Jesus who dies on a cross, so that a person who has a history of wrongness and brokenness can be forgiven as he comes to him and says, please forgive me. I'm sorry for the things I've done. Please forgive me. You know, this is a story of a life that has experienced a 180-degree turn, a complete turnaround, a turning in the opposite direction, from pursuing all these things to now walking towards the God whose arms, as we were hearing from Nate earlier, are held open. I wanted to read you some words that are from the New Testament. And perhaps these words are from a song recorded in a little book called Titus that we've recently been reading together. Let me read you just this couple of sentences. And it's beautiful poetry, but it talks about the most dramatic, incredible change and how it comes about. It talks to people whose lives have been kind of crashing to nowhere. And it says in the middle of that description of lives that are crashing to nowhere, but when the kindness and love of God, our Savior, appeared, he saved us. It's talking to lives, not that are sorted lives, but lives that are broken lives. And this ancient song speaks in to lives like that and talks about the kindness and love of God that comes. How does it come? But it talks about it coming and saving, rescuing. And the poem or the song continues. It says, it's not because of the righteous things we had done. And Nate's songs have been echoing that. It's not about people sorting their lives out. Rod's story echoes that too. It's not about righteous things we can do. We could never do enough to get there. But instead, it's because of his mercy or his love or his grace, his amazing grace. That is why, that is how it is that he saves us. He rescues us. And this is a description of what happened in Rod's heart, what's happened in the hearts of many people here. He saved us through the washing of rebirth and renewal. We heard one of Nate's songs saying, could I have a new start? Is a new life possible? Well, this piece of ancient poetry, as it speaks about God's intervention in Jesus, says, yes, it is. He saves us through the washing of rebirth and renewal by the Holy Spirit. It's about a God who reaches out and washes dirty hearts, brings forgiveness to broken lives, whom he poured out on us generously through Jesus Christ, our Savior. Isn't it beautiful? You might read those words and think, I know what that's about. I've experienced the washing and renewal of rebirth as God, by his power, has reached into my heart and changed my life. And as you're listening to these stories this morning, it's resonating with that touch of God that you've had as you've come to Jesus and said, please forgive me. Please give me new life. You died so that I could be forgiven. You rose from the dead so that I could have new life. Thank you, Jesus. And you remember that moment, and this morning your heart is resonating with these stories and with this beautiful piece of ancient poetry. But some of us are sitting here this morning and thinking, That's quite beautiful, actually. And I don't know what that's about. I've never had that. But perhaps this morning your heart is saying, this is true. It's not just something that has touched one or two deluded people. But this is based on truth. And I want to trust my life into this loving God's hands too. I want to say, I'm sorry for all the rubbish. Please take my life and renew and refresh and bring new life on the basis of what Jesus has done. And perhaps this morning, you would like to take that step of personally experiencing revolution as you put your life in the hands of the Jesus who loves you, who's died for you. We're going to listen to one more song, a song that perhaps speaks of a life turned around, and then I'm going to just close our morning. Thank you, Nate.
This song is called Prodigal Son. It's based on two things. There's a parable that, well, an awesome story with meaning that Jesus told when he was with his friends, and it's about a young lad who takes all of his inheritance, runs away from the family, spends it all, gets to the lowest place from the highest place, and goes home and in shame, but actually receives that amazing grace that we've been talking about. But it's also based on my life story. It's kind of how I've accepted that there's a loving God that wants to love me, and how I've let that into my life. So yeah, my kind of story really resonates with that, running away but coming back, and instead of finding anger and being disallowed, just finding love, like tremendous, tremendous love. So yeah, I hope you enjoy.
Tragic separation sits heavy in my heart. A broken relationship from the very start. They say that there was paradise when it all began, but how can I long for what always escapes my hands? Ooh, 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 ooh. So take a step back, God, I'll take it from here. I've found you distant and harsh, reality is found down here. No looking back now, Father, I'll make it on my own. For now, all I long for is waiting outside your plans. Whoa, whoa. Then in silence you spoke, I have heard all of your protestations, explanations. I won't get in your way. I won't get in your way. Now I'm alone. Ooh. I'm alone. Ooh. Ooh. Steady separation that dawned in those days gave me no light to see by as I stumbled through the haze. I'm looking back now, Father, can't make it on my own. Right now, all I know is my shameful disgrace. As I wander away from the crowds like a stray, I've never felt so completely alone. My life is worn to a fray, and I think back to the days when my father's house was my home. As I fight through the pain, I know that being his slave would be more freedom than I have yet known. But I'm so afraid that I'll be met with disdain. Could I be loved by the one I've disowned? Will this be enough? Ooh, my broken heart's giving up. But through the tears you spoke, come into my arms. My son was dead, now he's alive. And what was lost has been found. My knees hit the ground. Now I am home. Ooh. Ooh. I'm home. I'm home.
Thank you, Nate, for sharing these amazing songs with us. Nate's going to play us some live music on as we enjoy our coffee and tea in a few moments' time. But just to, as we close now, there's a few invitations, aren't there, echoing in the air. So one of them is, look, if you haven't been on the Christianity Explored course before, you're invited. And if you have been on, you're invited to come again. And there are invitations on the tables, and there's the opportunity, if you want to sign up as you leave, but also just to ring in or use that email address on the invitation. Or tell a friend that you've come with, hey, I want to come to that. Would you come too? And it would be great to see a number more at that course beginning on the 12th of June. But there's another question, another invitation echoing in the air, and I think that you perhaps hear it. And that is this invitation to personally respond to the God who loves us, who reveals himself in the person of Jesus, who has come to rescue us, the Jesus who died on a cross so that we could experience forgiveness and renewal, so that we could experience new life, rebirth. We read that beautiful verse together that speaks of this kindness and love of God appearing so that we could be saved, not because we do stuff, but because he loves us. Poured out on us generously through Jesus Christ, our Savior. And as we close, I'm going to pray. This might be the first time you've ever prayed, but you might want to close your eyes and echo this prayer in your heart as we say to God, God, thank you that you are so loving and glorious. Please forgive me for the wrong things, the rubbish things I've done. I want to live for your honor now. I want to experience that 180 degree turn, me too, by trusting in Jesus. Let's pray. Father God, we've just heard a song about one who was lost coming home and experiencing the Father's embrace. And we've heard Rod's story, a person who was far off but who experienced the Father's embrace because of Jesus, because of Jesus' death and resurrection. And we want to thank you for that amazing grace, that love that drove Jesus to come from heaven itself to die as a sacrifice for each of us so that we could experience forgiveness and life in fullness. And this morning, perhaps there are some of us here who for the first time want to say this to you. We want to say thank you that you are such a God, one who is loving and forgiving and reaching out towards us. Thank you that you, God, came here in the person of Jesus to die for me. I'm sorry for all the wrong things I've done. Thank you that Jesus died so that I could be forgiven. And this morning I say that I trust in him and his forgiveness. I want that gift of new life that you offer on the basis that Jesus died to bring me that. And I trust my life into his hands. I want to live for him as my king. And I pray these things because I want to live for your honor, Father God, not for my own any longer. And I pray these things in the name of Jesus, the name that saves. Amen. Well, thank you again for being a part of our cafe revolution, our Oak Hall Cafe here this morning. We're going to keep chatting. And if this morning you've been saying, I want to take that personal step, then tell somebody in the room, perhaps somebody you've come with or me. Come and tell me. I'd be delighted to hear. And we'll enjoy more top-ups of coffee, more grapes and various other things on our tables, and also more music from Nate as well. Thank you.
Frozen steps
of mirrored lights, dance amongst the stars and deflect the night. One by one, piece by piece, the steps unfold, not the last, nor the last, not the least. When all the lights go out and it seems like there's no more steps to tread, oh, I will trust. Oh, I will trust. Crimson red stains that show, broken bones sleeping out in the dirt, blow after blow. A setting moon or a rising sun, does it matter which one we see when we know what's coming? When all the lights go out and it seems like there's no more steps to tread, oh, I will trust. Oh, I will trust. Oh, and barren land, there's a light that never falls to dusk. And you, mighty Father, I will trust. And you, mighty Father, I will. Part of me wants to love you, and part of me knows I can't. A part of me is still trying, but part of me isn't there. I don't want to fail you, but I know I will. A part of me wonders if you'll love me still. Part of me runs to you, a part of me falls behind. A part of me tries to turn back at the finish line. No, I don't wanna hurt you, but I know I will. A part of me wonders why you love me still. 'Cause this time it's forever, I know more than ever that I got it right. Sweet dreams tell me nothing, I need hoping something, and I found it right here with you. A Part of me wants to follow. A part of me is letting go. A part of me is still hiding. A part of me you don't know. No, I don't wanna give up, but I know I will. A part of me wonders how you'll love me still. 'Cause I know what it takes to love me still. 'Cause this time is forever, I know more than ever that I got it right. And sweet dreams tell me nothing, I need open something, and I found it right. Sitting around the table, cushions on the hardwood chairs. There's little wooden colored people, circle in the colored squares. One more time, I roll the dice. Don't like to make a habit of losing twice. So deal those cards and make those notes. You got to take it serious, it ain't a joke. Knock, knock, who's there? Knock, knock, who's there? Knock, knock. The enemy surrounds me, competing for the final place. Don't like to think we're only satisfied when we win the race. I've seen it in the magazines. We scrabble with words to find who we want to be. The game of life is no trivial pursuit. Articulate well when you don't got a clue. Knock, knock, who's there? Knock, knock, who's there? Knock, knock. Knock, knock, yeah, I'll keep playing those children's games, laughing when the punchline comes. Knock, knocking to find who's who, desperate to say I won. I fight to get out on top, not caring who I lose on the way. But now I'm on top, I find the joke's on me. The joke's on me. Now I'm on top, I find the joke's on me. Knock, knock. Knock, knock. Knock, knock. Knock, knock. Yeah. Knock, knock. Who's there? Knock, knock. Who's there? Knock, knock. Knock, knock. Knock knock, who's there? Knock knock, who's there? Knock knock, knock knock. Bouncer or a boozer, you're a chicken or a loser, you're a taxi driver, a husband or a wife, or a pile of items on a shelf. Wait a minute, I don't feel right with that. No, I don't feel right with that. No, I don't feel right with that. But what has feelings got to do with anything? You're a complicated system, a biological assistant. You're a pile of items that should have never happened. Your DNA and nothing else. Whoa. But I don't feel right with that. Do you feel right with that? No. Are we content with that? Or are we seeing only half the picture when you describe me pitiless indifference? It don't account for our felt significance. Who are you? Who are you? Who are you? What if I'm not just flesh and bone, and not defined by what I own? Yep. And if there's purpose underneath the surface, I wanna find out for myself if we are made in God's image, if we are His beloved, and if He died to sever the divide, then I'm worth dying for. When you describe me pitiless indifference, it don't account for I felt significant. Who are you? Who are you? Who are you? Yeah. Who are you? Who are you? Who are you? Ooh, yeah. I don't want to let my emotions get the best of me. A notion I'm sure you'd agree with. I wanna know what's real. So I don't think I'll take much more easy all again. A crutch for my life to mean something. Oh, how I wanna know what's real. Oh, is it heaven? I like the sound of a little bit too much. When I see war all around us, is it wrong to search for love? Is it just easy, too good to be true, to rest upon this crime? My heart won't disagree if I'm honest that a crush is no bad thing. When you're helpless, this world's not as it should be, and that, my friend, is real. Are my desires trying to trap me or lead the way back home? Maybe the sense I don't belong here is proof I don't belong. Don't tell me it's all been made up. We need a helping hand to save us. Just cause I want it to be true doesn't mean it's not. Well, it's not easy, but good cause it's true, to rest upon this crutch. It's lovely to know that I'm safe and I'm home in the loving arms of God.